This is UK Recovery Radio. Start your journey here.
Welcome to UK Recovery Radio, made by the recovery community to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery.
Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to UK Recovery Radio's first Purple Bull podcast. Welcome to you all.
UK Recovery Radio began when a group of us came together in January 2013, drawn by the idea of making programmes about recovery. We have had fun learning during the production of this first Purple Bull podcast, and we would love to welcome new members to join us in our venture to inform as well as to educate our communities about recovery.
Like us, you will meet and get to know new people who are at different stages in their own personal recovery journey, making positive changes to lead to a more positive future.
We are passionate about recovery, and there is definitely a life after addiction, and we are here to inspire it, promote it, celebrate it, prove it and spread it.
UK Recovery Radio, the voice of the recovery community.
What inspired you to work in this field?
I started going to mutual aid meetings and peer support meetings and sitting with other people who were talking about real things that are happening now and like being so honest it was almost unbelievable sometimes, and that's where I got the most inspiration from.
What inspired my recovery was 7 years ago being in a prison cell and thinking I'm 30, what am I doing here? That was my light bulb moment, as I'd like to call it.
Well, I had a phone call from somebody off my estate I hadn't heard from for a long time. And he'd gone down to Weston-super-Mare off a project in prison. He'd sent him down there and he told me about this place, told me that it was clean, and I'd never heard anybody that was clean before. And that inspired me really at that time in my life where I needed a bit of hope, at the time in my life where I was willing to do anything it took. And that was my initial inspiration really, to give it a good go.
Not understanding the way that I felt, feeling that hole inside and just that wrong feeling, that's really what inspired me to go out and to find a solution to that feeling.
What would you say to people out there to promote recovery?
I'd just say it's worth it. The life that I lived, well, it wasn't living. I just felt that was how, in my addiction, in my active addiction, I was not living, you know, just wasn't dead yet.
I know who I am. I like who I am. I can look in the mirror and go, do you know what, you're all right, Liz. You're not all that bad. You're not perfect, but who'd want to be perfect? That's what I like about recovery.
What kind of things do you now celebrate about recovery?
Now I just friends and relationships. Like, that's for me one of the biggest things, because I just hated people. I didn't trust anyone. I hated myself.
Any recovery is something to be celebrated.
I celebrate my life, you know. I don't want to die anymore. I want to live, you know. I've got so many things in my life to look forward to, you know. I've travelled around the world since being in recovery. I've got so many really good friends that are close to my heart in the 12-step fellowship. My kids, I've got four kids now who I absolutely idolise. You know, I'm learning how to be a father. I'm learning how to be a husband.
The coolest thing to celebrate about recovery is that when you meet people who have been through an experience, often a traumatic experience or an experience that has led them to be what might be termed recovered, is their lust for life, their absolute enthusiasm for everything about life. And that, to me, is heartening, inspiring, and everybody's got a lot to learn from it. Everyone.
The ability to be myself, the ability to, I don't have to kind of try and please other people, or try and fit into other ways of being, you know. For the first time, I don't have to put up any fronts, I don't have to pretend to be someone that I'm not. Got quite a soft and gentle character, really, and in my addiction, I wasn't allowed to show that side of me, and today I can. That's what I celebrate, being me.
We need to be shouting that from the rooftops, because this is a Hollywood story. This is every day in people that recover. This is what we should be talking about, not what some supermodel's wearing or what, you know, substance some famous person has taken. This is what we should be talking about. This is human life in its various form, and it is just something to celebrate. It's just such a fantastic thing when you see it happen.
The potential for everybody, and the way that everyone is meant, you know, we came here to be happy. That is our purpose. That is, we're meant to live happy, fulfilled, successful, abundant, fun, brilliant lives. Like, that's what we're here for. And anything less is unacceptable for me.
I would definitely agree with that.
You're listening to UK Recovery Radio, produced by the recovery community to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery.
In the first Purple Ball podcast for UK Recovery Radio, we will be learning some of the terminology of recovery in our What is Recovery feature from professionals and recovering addicts. We also have some inspiring poetry coming up and we'll be hearing from the Be the Change Service User Conference with the first regular report on the 5th UK Recovery Walk.
Recovery is contagious, so come and catch the recovery bug here.
At the first UK Recovery Radio workshop in January 2013, 15 volunteers began to discuss making a series of podcasts about recovery. In the group, there were men and women at various stages in their own recovery, and the conversation led to a number of questions for our budding reporters to ask people in recovery and professionals working in the addictions field alike. Our first question was...
People talk about routes to recovery. Surely the only way is to stop. Dr. Ed Day.
The phrase routes to recovery, there's different ways of getting there. With some people it's using a substitute medication. With some people it's going to prison, detoxing off and deciding they're never going to use ever again. There are various different ways you can do it. And I think you've got to be careful not to sort of try and imply that one way is better than another way. Because I think any way of getting there is to be celebrated and is to be encouraged.
When people talk about routes to recovery, it's about any 1,000-mile journey starts with a single step, and that might be going in and getting a needle exchange to help prevent you getting a bloodborne virus.
I'm a 12-step member and I'm abstinent, and I thought that's the only way. But you know, it's a recovery journey. You know, people who start, you know, with their kind of health improving, with their getting hope, you know, getting some support, that's the beginning of their recovery journey. But for me, it was when I did stop taking drugs and I got abstinent and I learned how to deal with life on life's terms. As long as there's a goal, you know, for people to get clean, most people in the community need some kind of recovery.
Recovery is also being open to face up to things that you might keep repeating and being open to doing something a bit different and doing it in a healthy state of mind, which can mean being sober for the first time, being quality drug free for the first time.
If you're doing something to improve the quality of your life, who is anyone else to say, oh, you should do this without medication or you should do this with medication? Then, you know.
The American group talked about being abstinent from all substances. The British group were a bit more cautious. They said that you were no longer controlled by the substance, so that might imply that you've stopped altogether, but it might also imply that you're using it at a manageable level. So control over your addiction to the substance is one part of recovery, but they also talked about being physically and mentally healthy.
You don't have to be clean to be in recovery. If you're going for a process of sustained positive change, whether you're using, reducing the amount, trying to stay stable on a script, trying to move forward with your life, then I think you're in recovery. And I'm a great believer that recovery is a journey rather than a destination. Everyone's different. Recovery needs to be defined by an individual, not by someone else. I think it's rude to define somebody's recovery for them. It's a potentially personal thing, though.
Well, that was Jamie Sadler there from Datus. More about Datus later in the programme. So if there are many routes to recovery, what does recovery look like? Louise Stringer from Park House in Birmingham.
Using your time productively, that to me is a good recovery. And we see that with people on stabilisations here as much as we see people who are abstinent.
So then recovery looked one way for me. It was about stopping using it, staying on the scripts and stopping. Then I was on a prescription. Then recovery is about actually pausing and getting my life, doing things, doing substance use involvement, getting involved in all sorts of things. So recovery looked like that for me. Then I thought I need to get rid of the methadone, so then it was reducing the methadone, then moving on to Subutex. And then so after a few years of doing that, it was about actually getting off the Subutex. Along the way, building myself a life. So again, that for me, recovery is a journey, and I was in recovery all the way along. But I suppose recovery from an addict is about the relationships I've established, keeping up my responsibilities, and kind of just living as well as I can.
Now, what does normal mean? Normal means all sorts of things to different people, but to me it means they want to have the things that they see everyone else having. They want to have a job, they want to have a family, they want to be able to walk down the street without fear of being arrested or being attacked by someone. They want all those basic human needs.
And that's the measure of progress, the distance between where you were and where you are now. So even if your life is not as you want it to be today, here and now, think about the things that have improved. Don't just always focus on the things that you haven't yet done, and celebrate yourself in that way. Become your own champion, support yourself, be a fan of yourself.
Experiencing life on life's terms, you know, which is really hard sometimes, but actually I quite enjoy the challenge. I just sort of having to look it square in the face and take it on board however it throws at me.
In February, at the Drink and Drugs News Be the Change conference, we spoke to many service users and they were all going on about recovery capital.
Recovery capital is a very, very important slice of the recovery pie. I think recovery capital is supportive people, places and things in your life.
Like their recovery capital, you know, education, training, fishing, if that's what keeps them safe, you know.
Recovery capital is a concept of trying to help people that work in treatment settings understand that it isn't just about giving someone a medication and that will solve their problem. It isn't really even about doing some sort of treatment with them. It's about the whole picture. It's about your life isn't going to change unless you address all of those deficits that you might come into treatment with.
Just stopping is going to involve getting help.
Yes.
You know, you need support, and it's not because you're somehow lacking or not good enough that you need support. It's because that's a fundamental part of the recovery process, is having the support of either professionals or your peers or, you know, whatever works for you in that sense.
Social support is, I personally feel absolutely crucial in terms of the early steps to recovery and indeed the long term. I like the phrase that I can't do this, but we can. It's a man is a social being, and we're much better at achieving goals if we do it as a group with other people helping us than if we do it on our own.
The notion from the land of recovery that I can't, but we can. If it's all about I, me, then it's a reflection of deep-seated addiction, which is a manifestation of self-will and right. Me, poor me, a drink. Without joining other people, the prognosis is bleak indeed. Social isolation, in and of itself, without drugs and drink in the mix, is damaging to your physical health. But basically, it's all this thing about you are defined by the people around you, yeah? There's something about being able to move out of that individual treatment, individualistic world, to a world of community. Because otherwise, we'll be, just as we sort of are now, if we carry on doing what we're doing, we will retreat the third generation, the fourth generation, and the fifth generation.
It's through using your time meaningfully, building that links with your family, and being honest, being truthful. There's a concept about act as if to be as if, and if you feel you're doing well and you present that you're doing well, eventually you will do well. If you force a smile, after a while you genuinely will be smiling.
You are what you do. If you do bad things, you feel like a bad person. But if you act like a good person for long enough, you become a good person. What's the definition of a good or a bad person? It's what they do, isn't it? I think recovery capital can be built with a little bit of effort. That's about your inner resources, your inner drive, your motivation to do it. All those sort of things are things that you possess, really, to help you move forward.
It's building on every aspect in someone's recovery. It's about employment, it's about family, and it's looking at what a person already has.
Meeting so many new people in recovery, we began to wonder if a person can ever be recovered.
Severe addiction is a relapsing and remitting disorder. And what we need to do is... But there are lots of relapsing and remitting disorders in medicine. High blood pressure, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis. All these things are problems that lots of people manage day to day at the rest of their life. And it doesn't take over their life. And perhaps you can view addiction to some degree like that.
I think for me, as the 12-step fellowship says, there's no D in recovery. I think you can move away from some of your more active problems, and that might be substance misuse. But I think it's for every individual in life, you have issues.
Recovery hasn't got an end stage. It's you go through your whole life, maybe, recovering.
Over time, the brain does come back to normal. You can see it happening. These fancy scans they do, you can see the brain coming back to normal. And so the risk of lapse and relapse gets less the longer you go without using. So that's the positive message I like to give people, that, you know, in the early days it is really, really hard, but it does get easier as time goes on.
Somebody's recovered when they think they're recovered, I suppose, in a way. I believe that you can be recovered at some stage.
But as time goes on and your recovery gets stronger, there is this idea that sort of going out 4 or 5 years, you're actually then better than well. You've not only got the health and the normality that everyone else has got, but you've also got the experience that you've been through to get there.
Better than well. Can it become a reality for anyone who is suffering through their own or somebody else's addiction? Steve Dixon, thank you, who will be telling us more about Changes UK later in the programme.
If treatment services are going to start delivering more recovery-orientated practices, then the recovery community needs to be a part of that. You know, if service users are not an integral part of it, it's just never going to change. And I think if you look around at the services that are, you know, like turning out people, you know, into recovery, getting people out of treatment, them are the ones that have got service users working within that, volunteers, peer mentors, you know, it's been really successful. The ones that aren't doing that are not producing the results.
One of the great things that's happened in the last 3 years with the promotion of recovery as a concept, of recovery groups, recovery communities, things like, you know, recovery radio, it's all about making recovery visible to people that are at the depths of their problem.
And I think it's important, really, that the recovery community is within the services, giving people hope and letting them know that recovery is possible, because I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know what clean was at first, anyway. But I didn't know anybody that was clean. I think the difference is these days that the recovery community is within them services and it's pulling people into the recovery community.
If people want the help is here for them, and you can do it. Anyone can do it.
I just love recovery. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have anything like this before, where you can come out and be part of, because that's all basically what we want to be. We want to be part of a group, and that's what we're about. We're making recovery visual that, you know, it is attainable. You can do it.
To let other people know that recovery is a reality and it's also something that any one of us can tap into.
That was Anne-Marie Ward there. In What is Recovery? You also heard from Mark Gilman of the National Treatment Agency, Marcus Parsons of Inclusion, and Paul Ansorge from Irish in Birmingham.
Fiona Macquarie and Naomi King of the East Arch team, and voices from the Be the Change conference at the East Arch community event.
You're listening to UK Recovery Radio, produced by the recovery community to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery.
In February, a few of us attended our first conference as volunteer reporters for UK Recovery Radio.
Be the Change was the sixth Drink and Drugs New Service User Involvement Conference. It was held at Birmingham Motorcycle Museum. We met so many different services that were there to help people with their addictions into treatment. And we heard some really inspiring stories from ex-service users who are now working for drug treatment centres and services all over the UK. It was very inspiring. We got to listen to a few key speakers who spoke about challenges, stigma around addiction and treatment, about how drug and alcohol treatment should fit in with the new public health framework.
And also about the place drug and alcohol treatment will have in public health England.
There were workshops on user involvement that ended with a flash mob to promote the recovery walk. We learned so much good stuff and met so many great friendly, warm and kind people. I would recommend to anyone in recovery to attend an event like this and you will never forget it.
My name's Jackie, I'm a committee member for the Lancashire User Forum.
My name's Liz and I'm a volunteer for CRI in East Hall.
My name's Alex and I'm a drug practitioner with Suffolk Dip. I'm also the service user involvement rep.
Basically we're a bunch of people that started off with 50 members and now expanded to 200. We were sponsored originally by LDAT. But now that sponsorship's been pulled now, through commission, etc.
Are you surviving now?
Well, we've done very well because what we do is our resources are the people who are in the community.
CRI is a local substance misuse service. They set up a peer mentoring scheme and just basically try and support other people to get the magic of recovery.
I start off in custody. I go around and speak to everyone that's been arrested and offer them a support with their drug and alcohol issues.
You can come out and be part of, because that's all basically what we want to be. We want to be part of a group, you know, to be part of the solution and to see it visually, and that's what we're about. We're making recovery visually that, you know, it is attainable. You can do it.
What inspired my recovery was 7 years ago being in a prison cell and thinking, I'm 30, what am I doing here?
Recovery to me, obviously, I've never been through it personally, but seeing my clients going through it, I appreciate obviously what a struggle it is, and I think obviously it's just helping them to help themselves.
Experiencing life on life's terms, you know, which is really hard sometimes, but actually I quite enjoy the challenge. of sort of having to look it square in the face and take it on board however it throws at me. Yeah. I like that.
Every service user is individual. Some service users are desperate for a script just to help them get over them initial withdrawal symptoms. Other clients is the last thing on earth they want. So I think if you listen to the client and then get their advice, then, you know, it can, scripting can be used in the right way. Obviously, if someone doesn't want scripting, there is alternatives, but it should be up to the client.
I think it's down to the individual, I really do. But I also think it's down to who the individuals are working with,
yeah,
and the services that they're with, and if that service is trying to promote a healthy lifestyle, and not just saying, oh, you know, you need to be abstinent, but supporting them in whatever it is that they want. Like their recovery capital, you know, education, training, fishing, if that's what keeps them safe.
Finally, we asked Anne-Marie Ward from UK Recovery Walk charity to introduce the fifth UK Recovery Walk.
Yeah, my name's Anne-Marie Ward and I'm one of the trustees of the new UK Recovery Walks charity. We started off in 2009 in Liverpool. We had about 700 people attend. 2010, we were in Glasgow. We had about 2,000 people. 2011, we were in Cardiff. We had maybe about 2,500. 2012, we were in Brighton. We think our numbers reached about 3,000. And this year in Birmingham, on the 22nd of September, we will be walking through the streets to celebrate recovery, hopefully, and maybe 4,000 or 5,000 of us, not just to celebrate recovery though, to advocate for better treatment services, and to let other people know that recovery is a reality and it's also something that any one of us can tap into. And so hopefully we're going to build on the walks each year, and more and more people will be able to access recovery just through our own visibility.
UK Recovery Radio, the voice of the recovery community.
Later in the programme, episode 1 of Step Up to the Plate, the first in a series of open discussions about 12-step recovery, in which we tackle some of the myths and look at the actual steps before hearing about two of our local recovery services here in Birmingham, England, aiming to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery as we go. Stay tuned.
Recovery is for life, not just after Christmas.
Now a short piece from one of our recovery champions who works in service user involvement, The Seasons by Martine.
Recovery reminds me of the seasons of the year. First, there is autumn. You need to let go of all your old associates and watch them fall away like falling leaves. The feeling of the person you have been for so long dying inside, rotting away like the leaves that have already fallen onto the damp and cold ground. You know that the coldness is coming, but you must stay strong like the mighty oak, knowing that this is all part of the process and soon it will get better. Winter. Dark and lonely times, trying to convince family and friends that it's different this time, not wanting to leave the house, but having to muster up the courage and motivation to push on through the blizzards of that internal voice that wants you to fail, but knowing that your true blossoming self will come soon. Spring, you're starting to fight through the dark soil into the exquisite sunshine, and you blossom. A new life is visible. Rebirth and rejuvenation bubbles away inside you. You feel the sunshine of others upon your being, and that helps you to blossom more. You notice the little things and feel good about them, finally feeling human again, finally being reborn into the real you. Then summer. Eventually you know who you really are, full of life and warmth, using your sunny disposition to help others through their seasons of their recovery. You stand tall like the mighty oak, full of life, protecting those meeker than you, and helping them to discover that they too are not alone, and help them to hear the joy and laughter that summer brings, as the sun will always rise and set, and the world will always turn, giving us these seasons, which is natural.
You're listening to UK Recovery Radio, produced by the recovery community to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery.
Saturday the 23rd of March saw the launch of our new thought-provoking and sometimes hard-hitting audio discussion series in aid of UK Recovery Radio's objective of inspiring, celebrating and promoting recovery, called
Step Up to the Plate.
A panel made up of fellowship members and curious outsiders, chaired by some of our recovery champions, shared their insight, thoughts and opinions on their personal journeys of recovery.
Welcome to UK Recovery Radio's first discussion meeting called Step Up to the Plate, to highlight some of the benefits and answer some of the questions that are around the 12-step recovery process. The 12-step fellowship is considered to be the most enduring model for recovery from addiction. Dating from the 1930s and the means to recovery for people more than all other approaches combined, probably, would anyone like to say a few words on the origins of the fellowship?
From what I understand of it, in 1934, a guy called Bill Wilson met with another guy called Dr. Bob. It had its origins in the process which was pioneered by the Oxford Group, but then Bill Wilson, who was a chronic alcoholic himself, kind of took those concepts and kind of hit upon the therapeutic value of one alcoholic talking to another. When he met with Dr. Bob, he'd been sober for a while, and then he nearly picked up a drink, and he reached out, he wanted another alcoholic to talk to. And he sat and he talked with Dr. Bob for quite a long time. That was when they hit upon the therapeutic value of one alcoholic helping another, and how that was kind of far more use to either of them than talking to professionals and being locked up in hospitals and all of the other treatments that they'd both kind of been engaged in.
That was developed over time when people started wanting to use them, like promote themselves as kind of like the face of the fellowship, which is why the anonymity developed as one of the traditions and as part of the focus. And I think where the spirituality kind of comes into it is the power of one addict helping another one. You know, that's when people had that spiritual awakening, had that kind of understanding that if that person can do it, then I can definitely do it too. And I think that's why people started recovering, because they weren't doing it on their own.
I think that was a breakthrough in the actual diagnosis and the treating of, you know, specifically it was alcohol then, because a lot of alcoholics were ending up in the mental institutes and, you know, they were getting dealt with by psychiatrists, and there was no breakthroughs, there was no cures, other than a spiritual approach where you handed yourself over. You know, so some people had actually found God. You know, there's certain like symptoms, you know, that say, oh, Dan, this guy doesn't drink like a normal person, like everybody else. He drinks and there's always trouble. We think that this is a different kind of drinker. We got to separate the drinker from the alcoholic. And I think that's something that they looked at, you know, a certain set of symptoms around unmanageability.
So 12 steps and meetings, do they go hand in hand? Can you do one without the other? What are the benefits of the combination of the 12 steps and meetings?
I've only been in the fellowship 5 weeks, but on that question, I think I was just going to meetings and I got a sponsor and I wanted to get into the steps, but a little bit of me was fighting now that, you know, because I had some clean time behind me before I started the steps. And it wasn't until just recently that I needed to do that. The meetings weren't going to be enough, that I really did need to really look at myself, because my life does come unmanageable. Do you know what I mean? I have to work a programme and also go to the meetings. There's something, I don't know, I can't really put my finger on it, but they do go hand in hand. And I don't think that you can do it without doing both, because there's so many similarities, you know, with all other addicts in the rooms. You'll turn up to a meeting out, well, that's me. Do you know, and you go to another meeting and there's another part of there, that's me. That, and then if you're not doing it to me, if you're not doing anything about that or addressing, then that's where I think that I become more unmanageable, because I'm not really looking or dealing with my own situation.
Yeah, I'd just like to add on that. You come into the fellowship basically because you've got a problem with a substance. You've tried everything. For me personally, it's the end of a long road. 28 years, I've probably used one thing or another. And so that's a long road of being negative to myself, not treating myself nicely, not treating society nicely, not treating my family nicely, you know, just hurting myself and others. So I get to the fellowship now. When I get to the fellowship, I understand nothing. It's all I know is that these people have stopped using, apparently. So I go and I have a look, and I have a look. I've got a desire to stop using. That's why I've got to this meeting. I've got a desire to stop using. But to actually stop using, there's certain things that you need, you know, there's admissions that you need to make. You need to look at yourself and say, yeah, all right, then I've got a problem. It's the admission. That's basically our first step. Admitting, I've got a problem when I use. There's consequences, but I can't seem to stop using. Hence the powerlessness. I can't seem to stop. So once you've admitted that, then it's all right then. So there's obviously a problem. You look at, like, the unmanageability of your life, you know. I can't get to work. I've never worked in my life. I'm always in court. I'm in prison. I'm on DRR. I'm on probation. I'm always robbing everybody. I'm begging my missus for money. I never turn up for my son's football match. You know, the list is endless. That's unmanageable. So once you've admitted that, then okay, then I've admitted that. What am I going to do about it? Hence the steps, and then you move forward and to actually a solution. You know, and that's what I found is a solution in the steps. So it's a 12-step program that you're accessing. It's the meetings, the great, you know, the great to get together with people and listen to stories and that. But the actual internal stuff that you need to actually move forward in recovery, for me personally, comes from the 12 steps.
But you can go to the meetings, get some fellowship, ID with people as well. That's the term I picked up from going to the meetings. And just feel part of something a little bit different and be around other people who've got similar aims to you. There's a good proportion of people who go to the meetings and don't do the steps, haven't got a sponsor. And I think, ideally, if you want to get involved in a programme, it's worthwhile having a look at the steps. I've looked at them and done some. Don't look at the steps. Go to a meeting, ask the meeting about it and start learning about it. See if it's for you. Right? You don't automatically have to do the 12 steps to go to a meeting. Anyone who's got a problem with addiction or think they might have a problem of addiction should rock up and see what's happening, really. If you don't want to do the steps, nobody's going to force you to do them.
It's like, if I'm not working steps, if I'm not looking at myself and I'm not engaged in trying to change myself, then the person I was when I walked into recovery is the person that will walk me out the door. Do you know what I mean? In order to get clean, stay clean and be involved in, like, a kind of active change in my ideas and attitudes towards life, which are pretty flawed after nearly 20 years of using, I need to be working steps. You know what I mean? I've tried doing it the other way. I've tried a meeting programme, a coffee programme, and it didn't work. For me, what's worked and has given me quality of life and quality of recovery is working the 12 steps.
Not everybody's ready for the steps. Let's just get it right, you know. To make a honest self-appraisal of yourself, actually, it takes some kind of courage to actually look at yourself and say, all right, I've been wrong all my life. I wasn't right, you know. I'm willing to admit that. I'm willing to change. You know, that takes courage to change everything you know, everything you believe, to become this new person, reborn. There's three spiritual principles. It's said in our literature is that's the start of your recovery, honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. That's before you're even looking at any steps. Steps is something for you to improve self-improvement. If you want it. If you're not willing to look at yourself, you're not going to improve yourself. That's up to you. When I came in, I was willing to do anything.
So we've had a pretty good discussion about the basis of the 12-step recovery programme, whether it's via alcohol and drug addiction, which is the commonly sort of the most thought of, but again, as we know, it runs into other areas, and it's generally a life programme rather than just about the substances. So the steps, what are the steps? Step one, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and that our lives had become unmanageable. Lots of pretty easy to see unmanageability in an addict's life. But what's the powerlessness all about? What does that word actually mean?
For me, powerless is where I've actually lost the inability to choose. You know, for me personally, every day I said I'm not going to use certain substances, you know. Once I'd got them into my, I'd imbibe them. So once I've got them substances into my system, I swore off them substances. And I didn't do it once a week or once a month or once a year. I'd done it every day. And I'd done it with a conviction. You know, I really meant I was going to get my life back on track. I really meant I was going to stop hurting my family. I really meant I'm not going to get in trouble with the police no more. I really meant that I'm not going to put no more needles in myself. I really, you know, this is all stuff I said with conviction. Now, there was a force, you know, that would literally pick me up the next morning and carry me out, you know, to commit a crime, then carry me to a phone box and make me dial a number, then drop me on a corner and wait, you know, for some dealer to turn up and then carry me back home to imbibe them drugs. I don't know what that force was. I haven't got a clue what it was, but that's where I am powerless, when there's a force outside of me controlling me. So whatever I say with conviction doesn't come to pass because I've got no power. I've lost the power of control.
Yeah, it's like, for me, like, powerlessness is just, it's like a lack of power, do you know what I mean? Like, I can't stop. If I can stop, I can't stay stopped, and I can't stop starting. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. I've done a lot of stuff that's talked about in the literature, the 12-step fellowship I attend. I've moved countries, I've moved towns, I've done rattles and picked up a few days later. Do you know what I mean? I can't stop. You know, I've got no power on my own. Do you know what I mean? On my own, I had no power. Do you know what I mean? For me, I mean, on the paper it says, you know, explain powerlessness. Can we become powerful? Where does power come from? Like, the fourth word of the first step is were. Do you know what I mean? We admitted we were powerless, because I don't believe that I'm powerless today, right here, right now, because I've started seeking my power from the minute I opened my eyes this morning. Do you know what I mean? I read some literature. I connected with some other addicts. You know, I had a really good conversation with another addict on the way here. You know, I may attend a meeting later. You know, I'll speak to my sponsor or my sponsees or something. You know, I'll be finding that power each day. But if I genuinely believe that I am powerless, if I was powerless now, I wouldn't be sat here talking to you lot. At best, I'd be in the pub with a bit of sniff in my pocket, and at worst, I'd be in a crack house with a needle hanging at my neck. Do you know what I mean? But right here, right now, I've found some power, you know, and I find, where does that power come from? It comes from everything that's on offer through being a member of a 12-step fellowship for me. Do you know what I mean? So it's sponsorship, you know, meetings, literature, the service, all of the activities that I'm engaged in as a committed member of a 12-step fellowship. What my step one tells me, really, is that at some point I will use again, but luckily I've got another 11 steps. That's where I'll get my power from.
Where I experience powerlessness is, I think, when I recognise that I no longer had a choice. I made a decision, tomorrow I'm not going to use, and then I find myself using, and I think one word that is often used to describe it in the literature is that it's baffling. I just get baffled. The next day I'm using it again when I don't want to use. That lack of choice to me kind of like tells me I'm powerless. It frightens me as well, in the sense that I haven't used any illegal substances for a few months now. I sometimes get afraid that will I be in that same position again 2 months down the line if I find myself in a strange place? Would that powerlessness suddenly creep up upon me from nowhere? So that concept of the word powerlessness, I recognise it, but it's also a scary concept for me.
I mean, the 12 steps are amazing, and they have helped me understand where I've been and who I am and really get some really great recovery. But with the work that I do and with applying the 12 steps and with the, you know, kind of other things that I do, it's, you know, it's becoming, you know, it's becoming arrested. It's you know, that's where my power lies, is that I'm recognising it. And when, I think it's been said, kind of like the first step in kind of getting into recovery is just acknowledging those things and having an understanding and awareness that I'm powerless over people. Like, big thing, like, I try and control people all the time and can't do that. You know, and that makes me crazy. I can't even control what I'm thinking. How can I control what other people? You know, crazy.
How I look at it is that I use against my will. Do you know what I mean? No matter what, I could be on death's door and I will still use drugs no matter what, because I've got something in my head telling me that I've got to have that drug inside me. I have something inside of me. Now, today, like someone said, I'm not powerless over that. But what I am also powerless over sometimes is my thoughts. Do you know what I mean? My thoughts, sometimes I will get thoughts and feelings that I don't like. Do you know what I mean, yeah? But what the fellowship gives me is the power back by actually interacting. By whether it be a text, whether it be a phone call, whether I would talk to somebody, anything where I would know there's a meeting, that will empower me back into, I haven't got that little thought no more. I've shared it with somebody. Here we go. He understands where I'm coming from. And that's how I can be powerless over so many things, but I can gain the power back by reaching out, do you know what I mean, to the fellowship. And that's what I do daily. And I believe that.
UK Recovery Radio, taking recovery one step at a time.
The first two people we interviewed for the Purple Bull podcast were both people in recovery who now run organisations they have built themselves.
First we hear from Steve Dixon from Changes UK, then James Sadler of Datus.
Changes started in 2006 after I'd been in recovery down in Western Supermare for 2 years. And when I came home to visit, there was a really, really small recovery community. There was only a couple of 12-step meetings, you know, of the fellowship that I went to at the time. And it was quite a scary concept, really, to come home. And people from Birmingham who went away couldn't come back to Birmingham. And that kind of irritated me a little bit. And after training as a counsellor down in Western and working in a rehab, I always had a dream that one day I wanted to come home and start something up in Birmingham so that, you know, people could recover, you know, in the area where I'm from, yeah. And then we got our first property. And what we did is, we you know, in this time I found out that there's a local treatment centre in Birmingham, which is a Christian treatment centre, 12-step based, that was really successful and it did really well, you know, while people were in that environment. But when people came out of there, because there was no safe, secure housing or anywhere for them to go to, they'd return to their original environments and then would relapse and then they'd be back in the treatment centre again. So we linked in with them and said, you know, we just want to continue the good work that you've done. And what happened is people were referred from there into us, so they're in a safe, secure environment, you know, and we kind of linked them into volunteering, training, education, integrating them back into the community, getting them ready for independent living. And that worked, you know, the first 2 years was 100% successful. So everyone that came through managed to stay clean, and that was the birth, really, of Changes at the time it was called. And since then, the you know, Changes has kind of grown, really, from strength to strength. We've gone from one house and then, you know, as we've got more referrals coming in, we got commissioned to set up a house over in Sandwell because there was no recovery community. And then we eventually got commissioned in Solihull to be part of the SIAS group. And currently now we have a detox in Solihull. We've got a project called New Hope House, which takes people under 30 days. So as long as they're abstinent and they've got clean, they can come in and then they go to Park House with a structured daycare. And then they move into the second stage housing, which is, you know, what I described earlier, people kind of integrating back into the community and stuff. And in total, at the moment, we've got 9 properties all over Birmingham, Solihull and Sandwell. So it's just growing from strength to strength. And we're kind of looking now to kind of implement that in different areas, you know, and just try and spread that out, really, because the recovery community that's been generated from that is absolutely massive. You know, well said. You know, when I came home at that time, there was only 2 fellowship meetings that I attend. Now there's like over 50 meetings a week. There's like, you know, some meetings 40 to 50 people in them. You know, the recovery community is massive. And also we were named, Birmingham was named by the NTA as the recovery capital of the UK. It's kind of made us really proud, you know, from where we've come from, to having a real small recovery community, so it's absolutely massive now. And there's a lot of people as well that are not just from Birmingham, you know, recovering. There's people that are actually moving to Birmingham because of the recovery community. And the recovery capital that we've got here.
www.changes.uk.com.
UK Recovery Radio, building networks in the recovery community.
I'm James Sadler. I'm service manager at Datus, which is a peer-led charity that's been going for about 5 years now. I suppose we've got 2 main services. That's an advocacy service, that is. So if you've got a problem that's having an impact on your recovery, right, you can come to us and we'll advocate for you to get it sorted. Now, advocacy is about you coming to us and us advocating for you. So it's about helping you communicate, putting your options in front of you, but it needs to be clear that the choices are to the individual. It's not advice and guidance. You're not supposed to guide people in one way or the other. They want to achieve something out of the process they're involved with, and we'll support them to do that. That can be all sorts of stuff. Maybe it can be a treatment provider who they don't think has treated them fairly. There's some really weird and wonderful things that come through, and it's a pleasure to do that job it is and support people through it. And that's about getting put, and we're a peer-led service, so it's peer-led advocacy. If you come and do an advocacy scale, it'd be somebody who's been in recovery you're talking to. Same with mutual aid. The thing with the mutual aid is, it's not just about the people who are delivering it, but the important thing for us is that anyone who attends those groups has the opportunity to deliver a group themselves. So we have a training pathway, so the smart stuff, you can do that. The peer support stuff is taken over by service users now, they deliver it.
Because for us, recovery is not about just stopping drugs. That's a major part of it. But you also need an opportunity to move forward in your life. So the mutual aid side of it is about enabling people to train. We'll help them get a room if they like. We'll help them advertise it, get the equipment to deliver it, all that sort of stuff. I mean, they've got a massive network across the city that helps millions of people worldwide. And I just think more of that sort of stuff is what we need. And I'll do my best personally to make that happen, and DATAS will as well. I should mention there's loads of other stuff, but there's the development project, there's got Polytunnel up, got the place called, got Shaker in there. It's not just about, like I say, about treatment. It's not just about kind of packing drugs. You need other stuff to do with your life. You need to have other interests, and anybody comes up with a suggestion, then if people want to do it, then we'll crack on and give it a go. So anyone who listens to this, if you've got a suggestion of something you'd like to do, come and see us, and we'll see what we can do. I will do our best. I suppose we're all in it together, I suppose, is the message I've got. And if we can support each other to move forward, then why wouldn't we? And I'm a big fan. If people can see people who are doing all right, if you can see someone else do it, you can maybe believe that you can do it. If you have the opportunity to not round with them, yeah, that helps as well. Maybe not round with them, but actually meet them, interact with them, realise, yeah, that there is another way. That can open a whole new world to someone. That can. And I think it's up to us to do this as well.
You can interact with us on these social networks: Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, or email us at recovery.radio@yahoo.co.uk.
In episode 2 of the Purple Bull podcasts, we will be looking at the prejudice and stigma in society that is faced by people recovering from addictions, and we will be talking to the employment and education providers about some of the opportunities and initiatives that are available to support recovery.
There will be part 2 of Step Up to the Plate, our 12-step discussion forum,
and more reports and items to inspire, promote and celebrate recovery.
You have been listening to the first Purple Bull podcast for UK Recovery Radio.
Reports and interviews were by Humphrey, Jane, Gopesh and Paul. Poetry was by Martine. Editing and production was by Mark, Simeon and Nick.
UK Recovery Radio was started with an award from Birmingham and Solihull NHS Mental Health Foundation Trust.
UK Recovery Radio is a Purple Bull production for the recovery community.